Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, let's give our featured speaker a warm Tulare County welcome, Bear.
Thank you, thank you. I'm Bear, and I'm a very grateful fellow colleague. I got to do something just for a minute now. I do this every once in a while, and it kind of helps me get the butterflies flying in formation. Just a moment here. Okay, you can all put your clothes back on now. You know, I have a favorite thing in the big book here, and there's as soon as I can find it. I've got the page memorized, but I'm half blind here, and I'm glad that Anna loaned me her big print. By the way, I'd like to thank Rick and Anna for a wonderful, wonderful dinner tonight. And if there's anybody else involved in my coming over here, thank you. I certainly appreciate it. One of the things that I was talking with Mike about just before the meeting started is, you know, I guess there are some people that have to have a fairly big ego to come up here and talk. And maybe that's true. But I got to tell you this. I'm just a common, ordinary drunk. I'm not a circuit speaker. I don't want to be a circuit speaker, but I do want to give it away, okay? And the way I give it away is I share my experience, my strength, and my hope. Sometimes I tell it like it was, what it was used to be like, what it's like now, but I mostly stick to what it's like now because I've been doing it for 33 years, okay? I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendship, courage, self-assurance, and honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God, who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. And I'm serving them tonight. Thank you very much. My beautiful wife is not here tonight. She apologized. I got a message from her. She told me not to lie. Actually, that's not true. But she probably will. I don't know. I got my cell phone up here. One of the things that I also mentioned, too, is that I believe in having fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in having fun in meetings. I believe in having fun with what I'm doing, you know. If I can't have fun in Alcoholics Anonymous, and if I can't have fun in sobriety, what's the use? You know, I was talking with Dan and Scott over there, and I love watching people grow in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're either going to grow or they're going to go. But the really, really neat thing about it is when they go, hopefully a goodly portion of the time they come back. See, I told you, there she is. Or that's one of those assholes over there. I don't have any friends here tonight, you know. You know, Sammy and I used to go to the Las Vegas Roundup an awful lot. And one of the things that really struck me with the Las Vegas Roundup is there's a lot of newcomers go there. And a lot of times they can't afford to go to the actual Roundup, the speaker meeting and all that. But they do have a meeting outside of the Roundup facilities itself. And they have the meetings that are open to everybody. And it's really neat, you know. There was one time that we were there, and we were standing outside the Riviera. By the way, this year is the last year that the Las Vegas Roundup is going to be at the Riviera. This will be the last time. So that might be a pretty neat thing, you know. It's right around Thanksgiving, and it's kind of neat. But anyhow, we were standing outside the Riv, and, you know, the circus is right down the way. This guy was speeding down the street, and he got caught by the cops. They pulled him over right there, not far from the riv. And I didn't find out exactly what was happening until a little bit later. Come to find out, the guy was from Circus Circus, and the cop looked in the back of the guy's car and found there's a bunch of knives back there. And immediately the cops pulled out their guns and said, hey, what gives here, you know? And the guy tried to explain to him. He says, you know, I work at the Circus Circus. I juggle knives. And he says, here, let me show you. The cops kind of went, oh, you know, pointing a gun at him and all that good stuff, you know. And we're kind of watching this. And so he reaches in the back seat. He gets out of the car. He reaches in the back seat. And first he does one knife. Then he does another knife. And then he's got three knives. Then he's got four knives. And about that time, a newcomer came out and said, God, I'm glad I got sober when I did. I'd never be able to pass that sobriety test. We're having fun tonight. You know, the thing that I try my best to impress upon the people that I sponsor and the people I don't sponsor is you can do this thing sober, and I've watched an awful lot of people do time sober without doing the steps. They haven't got a damn thing I want. But the fact of the matter is they can do it. And there are people that find sobriety in other things, the churches and what have you, you know. I come to find out in my own life that there's a difference between going to church and going to AA meetings, see. I come to find out that after a period, I've been to a few churches, okay? I have to stay in the church or be a part of the church for about 3 or 4 months, maybe longer than that, before I find the hypocrites, you know? When I sit in an AA meeting, I can smell the hypocrites, you know? So if you're new in this program and you're still drinking and you're sitting here, you're welcome. You know, there might come a time when you're able to come into this room without drinking and find the sobriety that a lot of people sitting in this room have. It's not the kind of sobriety that some people think that they have to have. Everybody is different. Everybody has their own... I heard that I'm being taped tonight, which reminds me that my lovely bride is probably going to find that tape somewhere along the line to make sure that I didn't lie, you know. But the fact of the matter is if you're new in this program and you want sobriety, don't try to do it all at once. That's my, you know, take on it. What happened to me was the United States Navy found out that I was giving them a problem, so they decided to do something about it. My profession is a meteorologist. Some may have heard me on the radio at times out of Hanford. That's where I retired from. I retired, I lost count, about 7-8 days ago. And it's kind of like Dave was saying when I was talking to him. I'm completely retired, okay? I haven't the slightest idea what I'm going to do when I get up in the morning, and that's okay, you know? Rick, during dinner, was asking me what my hobbies were. My favorite hobby is Alcoholics Anonymous. It's kept me sober for this long. It's allowed me the opportunity to meet people that I've become very fond of and love very much. There's a few of them sitting here. They know who the hell they are. They're looking at each other now, you know.
Hi,
Mike. Mike the smoke up. You know, what happened to me was when the Navy tried to get me squared away, they sent me to rehab. Now, when I went to rehab, the only reason why I went was basically to find out how I could drink successfully. And by that I mean where I could go out and go to the Chiefs Club or any kind of bar downtown or what have you and not get into trouble. I had a penchant for the great white porcelain god, Aurora, you know, being a Buick salesman. I had hoped during the career of drinking that I was going to find and probably sell the way of being able to avoid that, you know, raw egg, orange juice, raw egg and orange juice, milk, buttermilk, potatoes slathered with butter, you name it, it just always came up. You know, they say this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful, and they also, I hear a lot of people say that the insanity of this disease is doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And I did that. I did that for many a year. I heard a guy share last night that was saying, you know, I was drinking and I didn't realize I was drinking that much. And I had reached that point where I knew that I had a problem, but I kind of hoped that it was something like cancer of the brain, tuberculosis. But don't tell me to take away my drinking, because that was my best friend. But toward the end of my drinking, my best friend started turning on me. I started getting into trouble. I started getting to the point where, you know, I had a family with two children, and my last drink, my last drunk, there's nobody in here that identifies with this. I would oftentimes come home from work and I would look in the refrigerator and I'd find that we needed milk. Or maybe I would look on the counter and see that we needed bread, you know. And that was my excuse to go out, oh, I'll get the milk, you know. Well, I'd come back 3 days later. The milk is sour, the bread is moldy. And the real coup de grace on that whole thing is my wife would ask me where I was. Now, and she'd also ask me where the money was, because it usually happened during payday, you know. They didn't have then the deal where you have an automatic, you know, your check automatically goes into the bank, you know. I had to get a check, and I had to go down to the bank, and I had to cash it. Well, what's an alcoholic do with all this money in his pocket? Huh? Well, come on, you know. So when she asked me where I was, I had no idea. I had no idea. And then she asked me what happened to the money. I didn't have that idea either, you know. Well, the thing about it was is that last night, I put my fist through a wall. I busted a full-length mirror. Luckily, both my children were sleeping at the time. But what happened was is I came out of my blackout around 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and my command master chief was sitting on the couch across from me. And you know how when you're drinking and you come out of a blackout, you have to be able to have enough sense to figure out what people are talking about, you know, so you can kind of get into the conversation. But the problem was that particular morning, the conversation was me, and I didn't like it. They wanted to know what they were going to do with me, see. And I'm still drunk. My command master chief said, you know, I'm not sure exactly what's going on here, but I can tell you this. You will be in my office at 7:30 this morning. You will be in my office. I said, aye, aye, will do, you know. So I turned to my wife and I said, well, what's that all about? And she said, you don't remember, do you? I said, no, I don't. She said, come here, let me show you. She showed me the hole in the wall. She showed me the broken mirror. She said, you just said some terrible things to me. Now, she's in the United States Navy also. And she wasn't going to put up with it any longer. That's why the command master chief was sitting in my living room. At 7:30 in the morning, actually it was about 7:20, I walked into my command master chief's office. Normally, I walk in and I sit down on his couch. This time I walked in, I sat down on his couch, and he said, I didn't tell you to sit down, asshole. First time he ever called me that. I got up. He said, you got about 5 more minutes to explain what's going on with you so I can give the CO a little bit of an idea of what's going on with you, because you're going to be seeing him in about 5 minutes after that. I went, Ooh, they're still talking about me. Woof, the audacity of it all. So my CEO, secretary, called the command master chief, and he said, yes, we'll do. He said, follow me. I went in, and the secretary is sitting there, and she said, go right in. As the command master chief was following behind me, she said, not you, master chief. I knew I was in trouble. I knew I was in trouble. I went in and I stood in front of the CEO's desk, and he had two folders sitting on his desk. And what I didn't tell you was is that throughout most of my naval career, that captain and I started through our career, him as an officer, me as enlisted, and we were stationed together two or three places, and he knew my MO. He knew what was going on. I stood up before him before. He didn't give me a chance this time. He said, you know, Chief, you're a fine man, and I hate to do this to you, but you've got a choice. On this folder right here, I want to send you to rehab. I'm going to see if I can help you straighten out on what your problem is. In this folder over here, I'm going to have you out of the Navy by Friday. This was a Monday, I think it was a Tuesday. I think it was a holiday portion there. I got off Friday. Yeah, I came back home Monday, I think it was. It was a Tuesday. Now, mind you, throughout my whole naval career and all my drinking, I did a lot of gambling. I did a lot of craps. I played poker. Somebody out there may know what in between is. I played that an awful lot. And I was a betting man, somewhat of a sea lawyer. And I knew this captain. I thought to myself, you know, I don't think he's going to be able to get me out of here by Friday. But then again, why take the chance? So I said, well, Skipper, it's like this. I guess there's probably a chance I have a problem. And he just kind of looked at me and laughed and said, yeah, I think you do. He said, your wife has told me, the Master Chief has told me, and I've heard stories about some of the things that's been happening to you out there on Hotel Street and what have you. This is in Hawaii. He told me, he says, you got that choice now. And he said, pick wisely. So I picked the folder that said rehab. I picked it up, and he said, you're set now. He said, I want you to go down to this particular place. It was called the Alcohol Rehabilitation Dry Dock. So there's a gentleman down there that's waiting for you. His name is Pete Peterson. And Pete's going to help you out. I went, oh, okay, good. Now, I'm looking for the cure, okay. And I thought for sure I was going to get it. And I went down and I sat in front of this guy's huge. He's huge. He's like a bulldog sitting behind the desk, you know, and I've had a few of those instances here and there. And he said to me, I understand that you're looking to come into rehab. And I said, well, I don't really think I have that much of a choice. And he says, you don't have much of a choice either, because he handed me a prescription for that stuff called Anabuse, you know. And I looked at that prescription, asked him what it was. He told me about, you know, the fact that, you know, if I drank, it was going to get me sick and all that. And I laid the prescription back down to him, and I said, I don't think I need that. He picked the phone up, and some of you don't know the old dial numbers, you know, the old phones. You know. He dialed a number, he got on it, and he said, yes, sir, yeah, just exactly what I thought. He handed the phone to me, and guess who it was? My commanding officer. And he said, Chief, you will follow this gentleman's directions to the letter. If you don't, I'm going to have your ass out of my knee, period. I said, yes, sir. Hung up the phone and I turned to Mr. Peterson and said, what do you want me to do, sir? He said, I want you to take that down to the dispensary, get it filled, and start taking it. That was my... Now, mind you, once again, I'm trying my level best to figure out this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, sobriety, you know. And I also wanted to try to figure out how I can get this thing and still be able to drink without getting my butt in trouble. So I went to rehab. So I memorized chapter 5. I memorized chapter 3. I went to meetings and I became almost a circus speaker. I was really good at it, you know. Until one day I spoke at a podium and my wife's then sponsor walked up to me and gave me a hug and whispered in my ear. And she says, "That's the first time I've heard any sincerity from you." And I kind of went, "What do you mean by that?" And she says, "Never mind. You just try your level best to be honest, you know." And I think that particular time I was honest. I started going to meetings. I got a sponsor. Now, there's some that have some sort of a formula for a sponsor. I don't think there is a formula for a sponsor. There's two reasons why you need to get a sponsor, or there's two picks of a sponsor that you can get. One is somebody you don't like, and somebody you don't like is number two. It don't make any difference whether you like them or not. If they're going to help you go through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, they're not. I don't sponsor people to be their friend. You know, I got a guy right now that I hung up on him the other day because he was, you know. It's only been about the third or fourth time. I said, "You know what? I don't have time for this. I'll call you later." I haven't called him yet. And the reason why I haven't called him is I'm thinking about it. See, I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that I don't have to react anymore. I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can stop and think about what I should say. And the best part about the way I am today is I always, always, always try to come from the side of love. There are a few people sitting in this meeting that they'll say, "I'll interrupt somebody. I'll tell them to sit their ass down and shut up." I can do that. And the reason why I do that is I don't want to hear any bull. I want to hear sobriety. See? And, you know, some people feel I'm hard. Well, maybe I am, you know. But there's a lot of people that I sponsor. I'm still getting Christmas cards and birthday cards from people I sponsor. I got one in Florida. He had, when I was 6 years sober, he had 16 years sober and asked me to be his sponsor. I didn't know what the heck that was all about, and I went to my sponsor at the time and I said, "Hey, what should I do?" He said, "Sponsor him. Take him through the steps. Give him a way of life that's going to help him out and allow him the opportunity to live." See, because what we have to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is we have to learn how to live in here and put up with all the stuff that we have to put up with so that we can have enough strength and courage to be able to put up with all the stuff that's going on out there. There are people out there that don't understand what Alcoholics is. They don't understand what Alcoholics Anonymous is. They don't understand what it's like to be downtrodden and drunk and not knowing that you can stop and still have fun and you can still enjoy life. There are people out there. And there are people out there that are enjoying life and have, I call it alcohol abuse. You ever seen it? I've watched it at times, you know. Somebody take a glass of wine and take a sip and say, "Oh, I'm beginning to feel it." What the hell to drink it for, you know? And I've had other people, you know, take a beer and drink about half of it and let it sit. It's getting warm, crying out loud. I've never had a beer in front of me that lasted more than about 30 seconds. Especially the first one. The first one almost got me, you know? And then, you know, I was sober for I don't know how long, probably about 2 or 3 months. I got out of rehab. And I went to the Friday night rehab meeting that I went to there on the base. And there was a gentleman that's from down San Diego way. They call him Preacher Carl. And I was sitting up front. My sponsor said, "You don't sit back in halfway measures. You just sit up here in Serenity Row, you know." And I'm sitting up in Serenity Row, and there's an empty chair beside me, like kind of like what Mike is, but there was nothing there on it. And Preacher Carl came over and he started his spiel and he turned and he looked at me, and I swear to God he must have been praying as much as I was, because I was nervous. I don't know why I was nervous, but he carried a cane. And he took that cane and he slapped it down along that side of the chair that I was sitting next to. Slap! Lock! And there was probably about as many people as tonight. And I jumped, you know. And then he reached in his pocket and he brought out one of those metal mirrors, you know. And I don't know if anybody's seen it. It's a polished metal mirror. And he said, he turns to me and he says, you want to know what your problem is? And he threw that mirror in my face and he says, there, see, that's your problem right there, you know. And then he takes the mirror and he puts it back in his pocket and he said, he didn't say any more to me. He got back up to the podium and he turned and he looked and he said, you know, there are some people in here that are going to get the message tonight. But more often than not, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to get the message and get the message and get the message and get the message. Until all of a sudden, one day, you get that loud pop. That's your head coming out of your ass, you know. Sometimes it happens quickly, sometimes it happens slowly. But sooner or later it's going to happen if you don't die first or get thrown in prison. So I was walking out of that meeting. I was walking beside my sponsor and we were walking down the sidewalk going to the car. And I turned to him and I said, you know, that preacher Carl guy, you know, that cane and that mirror was going to go someplace where the sun never shines, you know. And he said, yeah, there's a possibility of that, but what didn't you get about it? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, didn't you see the man in the mirror? I went, what do you mean? He said, you're the problem. He said, you haven't followed any directions that I've given you so far, maybe a few. But if you don't start following the directions that I'm giving you, and if you don't start going to more meetings, your ass is in trouble. And I kind of went, you know, hey, here's the old thing, you know. I love doing that. You know, before I quit and when I got sober, I still occasionally do it, you know. That's one finger pointing at you, and I got three of them pointing back at me. Now, who do you think has the problem? You know, and that's what he told me. He says, you're the one that has the problem. What happened was, is I started going to prison meetings, and a really great joy of going to prison meetings is going in there and being able to come out and hear that metal door close and those keys rattling, locking it up, and I'm on the outside and I'm not in the inside. That was great. I went with a guy, Manny L. I'll never forget him. We went to the Oahu prison. Matter of fact, the Oahu prison is in Hawaii Five-O an awful lot. And I don't think it's the same facility that I was going to. But I became a grand guru of the prison meetings, okay? I went there and I had the big book memorized, 12 by 12. I had it all. I went in one time, and the guard that usually escorts me to the meeting room said, hey, I got something I got to do. I'll be right back. He says, you know where the room is. Go on ahead and go. And he left me, and I turned around a corner, and a guy grabbed a hold of me by the throat. And he picked me up alongside the wall. And I'm choking. And I'm saying, what gives you? The guy grabbed a hold of me, slid me up the wall, and he said, you know, I'm in here because I murdered somebody. And for me to kill you right now is not going to increase my life sentence any iota. So if I were you, I'd be a little bit more careful about how you treat others and how you might be able to present yourself in Alcoholics Anonymous. Then he dropped me. And I dropped down on the sidewalk, kind of hit my head, and I was shaking, and I was going to get up, and I saw a pair of polished boots, and here it's that guard. And he's standing over top of me, and he says, you know, you've got to watch these sidewalks, man. I've been telling them that they need to be repaired. There wasn't anything wrong with a damn sidewalk, you know. They were in cahoots, you know. That very same guy, his name is John Caioli. He's now a minister in the Big Island. He got out of prison, I don't know how, and I went over to see him, and it was great. It was a good meeting, you know. I still have that feeling of that. I still have that, you know. Other things have happened to me, and many miracles. And I don't have the time to be able to tell you all of them. I can tell you this. When I was drinking, and I used to do outside issues too. You know, I still occasionally do an LSD trip, you know. I don't know how it happens. I guess I just still got it in my system. There's a couple of people that I know that have the same problem and all zone out. I see a few hands up, you know. And it's okay, you know, because I do that, and sometimes it only lasts for a moment, and there's other times that, you know, it goes for like 10, 15 minutes, and there's not really anything I can do about it. I also have what's known as vertigo now, spatial vertigo, and there's a lot of times if I move too quickly, the womb starts spinning, and it's a lot of fun because I keep thinking that I'm going to get to that LSD trip, you know, and it never happens. One of the biggest miracles that I've had about 3 years ago, I had gastrointestinal problems and up and down diets, you know, yo-yo diets and all that good stuff. And I went to my family doctor, and my family doctor said, I think we have your, we can be able to take care of that. So I had the Roux-en-Y intestinal bypass surgery. And, you know, I went into the operating room, and he gave me that shot, and I woke up. There was nothing in between. I was so disappointed. I thought for sure that I was going to at least see some good colors, you know. I turned to the nurse and I said, what was that stuff that you gave me? And she said, she rattled off some, you know, scientific name for it. And I said, that stuff, I don't think I want that anymore. And she says, why? I says, because it didn't do me any good. She said, it put you out for 6.5 hours, you know. I said, yeah, but I didn't know I was out. I mean, my God, when I passed out when I was drinking, at least I had some really, really good dreams, you know. Sometimes they weren't all that good, but they were dreams, you know. Oh, well. But anyhow, you know, to make things a little bit, I don't know if I'm going to talk here. I don't have anybody. I got 8 minutes. Shucks. Something like that, right? About 8 minutes. Huh? 15, 20. Holy smokes. You know, it's like I said, have you ever been to a meeting and you go there and you, especially some of the big meetings where they got circuit speakers, you know? And there's a couple of the circuit speakers that I can almost tell you their story because they do the same thing all the time. And I don't know, I can't do that. I get up here and I come from the heart and I come from the head, and I oftentimes have to feel my gut, you know? I can't lie because I got a bunch of so-called friends in here. and the fact of the matter is the only thing I've got to impart on somebody that's new is hang on to your ass because you're in for the ride of your life. They don't make merry-go-rounds, Ferris wheels, roller coasters, bumper cars. They don't make any of that stuff in any circus, any theme park or whatever it is. That it will give you the ride of your life if you stay sober. You know, some of the things that have happened to me just recently on my retirement, you know, I spent 46 years in meteorology. And if you're talking about the weather forecast, don't come to me. I'm not a good one. I was a forecaster, but I kind of enjoyed it because it was a kind of a position that you could be right 50% of the time. And the greatest thing that has been afforded me, especially in my sobriety, is I can go outside and I can look at a cloud and I can probably tell you what it is. I don't really give a rat's butt what it is anymore, but I can probably tell you what it is. You know, I've done all that, and I can look at a chart and I can tell you whether it's going to rain or not. Let me clue you in on something. I looked at the forecast today, and it's not going to rain for the next week, maybe 10 days. So, you know, I'm sorry, you know. The big D word comes up an awful lot in the office that I just retired from, and they're really, you know, everybody in the state of California is beside themselves on what's going to happen as far as our water condition, you know. When I was drinking, I never really worried about water because I always thought the ice cubes in the water was what got me drunk. I don't know if anybody can identify with that or not. I'll tell you, I'm just not, at the time that I was drinking, I was just not able to connect my drinking or my behavior with my booze. They were, you know, miles apart. I didn't know that was what my problem was, see. And to go along with that, it's the only disease, alcoholism is the only disease that tells you don't have a disease. And you know, it's really hard for us as alcoholics, especially in recovery. And you know, you can say you can call yourself you're a recovering alcoholic or a recovered alcoholic. I don't care what you say, as long as you're sober. You know, as long as you're not drinking. The fact of the matter is, in the big book, it says I counted it one time. It was like three or four times where it says recovered. You know, if you've got cancer and you're in remission, you're recovered. If you've got alcoholism and you're not drinking anymore and you're working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's probably a chance you're recovered. But for me, I like the word recovering because for me, I think it's an ongoing thing. You see, because I've got that little thing in my mind. It's a little guy on the shoulders. It's happened to me numerous times after 20 years. 15 years, 30 years. Oh, you can have just one? I'll never forget. I was sitting in a meeting one time, and my sponsor was sitting next to me, and I was up against the post. And it was a three-quarter house, and they were having a meeting there. And I don't know what, you know, a three-quarter house is the people or the alcoholics are able to come and go and have a job and all that good stuff. And they still have service there at the house, like cooking and cleaning up and what have you. And I was leaning up against this post, and my sponsor turned to me and said, "Check that out." I went, "Huh?" He said, "Check that post out." So I got up and I looked at the post. It said, "One is too many, and a thousand is not enough." For me, that's the truth. You know. While I was going to those prison meetings, I got involved in the H&I, going to the prisons. And the same guy, Manny L., took me over to the island of Maui. And the reason why he went over there is because he was the H&I chairman for Hawaii. And he wanted to go over there, and he wanted to help out the people in the H&I committee over there and you know, give them literature and find out if they needed, you know, big books and what have you, you know. And he called the guy up. We're in a hotel, and he called the guy up. And the guy, I didn't hear the guy's end of the, you know, what he said. But Manny said, "Oh, yeah, well, okay. Oh, no, not a problem. That's good." And hung up. And I said, "Well, when are we going to see this guy?" He said, "We're not." I said, "Why not?" He says, "Because the guy said he didn't need any help from anybody. He was doing good." I said, "Manny, what are you going to do about that?" He said, "Nothing. You know, he said he's good. I'm not going to help him, you know. It's just the way it is." So we decided, since we're on the lovely island of Maui, that we were going to do a little bit of running around. And he knew a guy at a halfway house that was running it, one of the managers. And we went to that halfway house. And we walked in, and a guy was the manager there. He welcomed us, and he took us back into his office. And he turned to Manny, and he said, "By the way, Manny, I wanted to show you something." He turned to me, and he says, "You don't mind if I leave you alone?" Because Manny and I have known each other for a long time. I wanted to show him this, what I got here. And I said, "Yeah, no problem." You know, and I was sitting on the couch, and they walked out the door, and on the couch was a little wooden plaque. And on that wooden plaque said, "If God isn't as close as he used to be, guess who moved?" I can't remember how far I was in my sobriety or my dryness, but I will tell you this. That was a particular time in my life where I was starting to question whether I was an alcoholic or not. So they came back. Manny decided to have lunch with the guys. We started, you know, we were going down this long hall, and I'm relatively certain that Manny and his buddy did this. I'm not entirely sure. I can't prove it. Because I didn't see it on the way in. But on the way out, there was a huge, huge plaque on the wall. One of those shiny plaques, you know? And what it was, is it was a big old orangutan who was sitting across a log. I don't know if anybody's ever seen, I've never seen that poster again in my life. I'm looking for it. But on the caption on that poster said, "Just when I found all the answers, they went and changed the questions." Now, folks, I got news for you. That made me think. I had no answers. I had a lot of questions. But you know what? Answers don't always match the questions. And the questions don't always match the answers. The only answer that I had and the only thing that I was able to do when I went to meetings and I heard this over and over and over and over again. I'm ready. Okay. Stop. Okay. Don't you do it again. I'm sorry. You're recording this, aren't you?
I know my case, though.
Anyhow, one of the things that I've come across in my sobriety that I cherish the most is watching people come in the room like Matt, Jim, Ken, sometimes Steve, Dave, vroom vroom. They come in, they get to meetings, they get into service, and all of a sudden their lives change and their eyes start to light up. The greatest thing that's been afforded to me in my life is to watch those eyes light up. See, because I was told a long time ago that one of the things that I had to look at was to look at somebody in the eye, because the eye is the window of the soul. And I oftentimes have to do that. I oftentimes have to do that even when I'm upset of whatever it is that's going on, you know. I try not to get too upset. There's a few people in here that know that I try my best, but it don't work. And that's okay. You know? I watch Dave, you know, and a few of the other people over here in Visalia and Tulare, and I watch Mike over there. You know, Mike's a very dear friend and his lovely bride. And I got news for you. If that man can stay sober, I'll guarantee you that no matter what's going on in your life, you can probably stay sober too. I have been to the hospital when he had open heart surgery. I've been to the hospital when he had lost one leg. I've heard about what's going on with him. He's gone blind. He's in a wheelchair. You know, the greatest thing that's been afforded to me is to be able to watch somebody. And listen, I'm not giving Mike any sympathy. He knows where sympathy lies in the dictionary. It's between shit and syphilis. See? But I do empathize with the fact that Mike tries his level best, along with some other people I know. Jimmy, you know who Matt's sponsor is, don't you? Yeah, Jimmy, I think you're the only black guy in here tonight. I'm sorry. Oh, no, there's another one. Oh. Thank you, sir. I sure appreciate it. There's been a couple of times where we're eating dinner or lunch or whatever it is, and there was one guy who was kind of a newcomer, and we were talking around the table, and somebody brought up the fact that Jimmy was black, and there was some, I think it was Dave that said it, "Jimmy's black?" You know. Jimmy's my best friend. There's three of my best friends sitting up front right now. And Bill, you can be one too, by golly, you know. And Brian, you got it, man. You know, Brian came in with a lot of sobriety, and he's learning an awful lot, and I'm learning an awful lot from him. He's going to be the chef out at Harris Ranch. Yeah. Yeah,
he come crying and bawling to me. I can't get a job.
So don't worry about it, man. God will provide, you know. He will. Honest to God, he will. But you got to be patient, you know. I never thought... It's just joking. The fact of the matter is if you're new in this program, the worst that you can do is go back out and experiment. And the reason why I say that is and Barb knows, and Jimmy knows, quite a few people in here know, I'm sure, you know, Grass, and a lot of us know that there's people that go back out and experiment, and they don't come back. You know, they find themselves in a slab in a morgue. And there's other people that end up in a hospital or prison. And you know, the strange thing about this, how come it is that a drunk that's sitting in a cell, in jail, prison, or whatever it is, asks himself the question, how did I get here? How did I get here? Well, if you can't remember how you got here, you know, how many people are in jail and in prison that have ran over somebody, a hit and run, and don't remember doing it? You know, I don't know if there's a count on that. I don't know what's going on there. All I know is I feel very fortunate that I'm not one of them. Okay? And a lot of my friends are not one of them. But all we got to do is take the first drink, because one is too many and a thousand's not enough. The obsession to drink has left me. I have no compulsion or no concern about drinking. I'll tell you what my concern is. My concern is life. Life on life's terms. You know, when I retired, the day that I retired, they had a party for me at the office and all that, and I bawled my eyes out. I bawled my eyes out, you know. After 25 years, and I spent 19 years in the office in Hanford, and those people were my friends. And they all knew that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's one guy that didn't show up at that shindig, and I knew he was there. And he was in these rooms. Matter of fact, I signed his card a couple of times. He wasn't there. You know why? I don't know why. I can probably guess. You know, I can probably guess, but I'm not going to, you know. The thing about it is, with Alcoholics Anonymous and with us being in a fellowship, and you know, here's the way I picture the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is how I got started on it. Somebody told me to hang around people that wanted to stay sober, so I did. There was a guy that was, as a matter of fact, he was my sponsor for a little while. He was big, he was black, and he was uglier than Jimmy. And he became my sponsor. That's Hoogly.
Yeah.
And then there was another little guy, Filipino. Now, I had a real problem with Filipinos in the Navy. And the reason why I had that problem is most Filipinos that I knew were cooks or dispersing clerks. The guys that feed you and the guys that pay you. And I never saw a Filipino cook or dispersing clerk driving an old car. It was usually a one-year-old car, you know, and they turned it in every year, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I'm getting paid. I shouldn't be worried about it that much, you know. It's okay, you know. And that little Filipino guy and that big black guy, we got together and we started a group of guys. Call it a clique? Sure, we are a clique. But you know what? I got news for you. The people that I hang around with will welcome Matt, Brian, anybody that wants to go out and eat with us. You know the reason why there's some people that don't want to go out with us? Because we're honest. Because we tell it like it is. So if you don't want to hear what it is and what's happening with you in your life as far as your inventory is concerned, don't hang around with us. It's real simple, you know? Dave has been hanging around with us for a long time, you know? And he's doing okay. I agree with you, Jimmy. I'm still not sure I understand why Denise is married to him, but that's beside the point. You know I'm joking, Denise. I love you. Oh. But anyhow, enough out of me. I can sit up here and plabber for, you know, hours about alcoholism, about how I became sober, about how I'm trying my level best to stay sober. You know what's really strange about that little guy that's sitting on my shoulder? He oftentimes says, "What are you doing here? And there's more fun out there. You can have good friends out there too. Yeah? It'll be okay. It's just one drink is all you need. After all, if you get really loose, you can get really social, you know? I used to be a social drinker. If you drink, so shall I, you know? That was my MO on what's going on. I had two modes in my drinking career. I either drank alone or with somebody. Didn't make any difference to me. So, oh, that's what that is. Anyhow, Rick's passing out some flyers there. They spelled my wife's name wrong, but that's okay. She's going to be here next week or next month, and you'll probably hear the rest of the story. You know, she sticks with what her story is, and I stick with mine. And you know, the AA guy meets the AA girl on the AA campus. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? I'm praying for some of the people that I know that it does work, but there's no guarantees. It's just like there's no guarantees in sobriety. There's that little guy, you know. I'd love to be able to just flip him off, you know. Just get him out of there. But it seems like my finger goes right through him. He just stands there and says, "Ha ha ha, I got you again." You know? I don't want him to get me. I love you all. If there's anybody that hasn't told you to love you today, I certainly have. And I do from the bottom of my heart. I'd like to thank Rick and Anna for a wonderful, wonderful dinner. I'd like to thank everybody else who's come. Ken was telling me it was going to be crowded tonight. Thank God it's not. Last month they had, my sponsor and I came in here and we sat over there and they were bringing more chairs out and I thought to myself, oh geez. And this is really bad because I'm thinking to myself, in truth, I don't really think I have that great of a message. But what I do have, I imparted on the, especially the newcomer. For the old timer, you know, what's an old timer? It's a long timer. You know, but we're all in the same boat. We all have the same thing that's going on in our minds. And we all, most of us long timers, understand what we have to do to stay sober. So if you're new in this program, hang on to your ass because you're in for the ride of your life. Thank you very much.